Well, good evening and welcome to the John Whitmer Show. Thrilled to have you with us this evening. Seems like I was just here. Oh, wait, that's right. That's because I was. Thrilled to have you with us tonight. We got a great show planned for you this evening. So, heck, let's just get right to it. We've got a really kind of a cool guest, Emmy and Golden Globe winning actor Michael Chiklis. Best known for his unforgettable role as Vic Mackey in The Shield and Ben Grimm, The Thing, in the Fantastic Four, will be with us. Talk about Hollywood, the arts, and the First Amendment. He's headed to Washington, D.C. this week to talk about the arts and the First Amendment. We'll talk to him coming up here in just a few minutes. Eben Brown, my buddy Eben Brown from Fox News Radio, will break down a major geopolitical shift as European allies possibly, quite possibly, prepare for a future without NATO. Warren Martin from Kansas Strong will bring us the latest in oil and gas futures and his role as a consultant on the hit Paramount series, Paramount Plus series, Landman.
Great show.
Great show. We had him on the Woodward and Witt on the morning show this last week, and I wanted to bring him in so I could talk a little bit more about Landman, because that's just fun for me. I love that show. I absolutely love Landman, and I wanted to explore that part of it a little more, so he'll be with us here coming up in a few. And my buddy Curtis Houck from Newsbusters will break down a new study that exposes how the networks have gone basically silent on the recent migrant crime wave in this country. Big shock. Yes, I know that's going to be shocking to you to hear that they're not covering it, because it's, you know, news that they don't agree with, news that's inconvenient truth. So why cover it? Because it's bad press. But we'll talk to Curtis about that. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. So we got a great show, starting off with calls as often as you want. So feel free to call in. We'll put you on the air whenever we can. You know, there are some quotes that just stick with you. This one is, not only was it a powerful quote, and it's one that I've always thought of, but it's certainly very timely because it comes right after April 15th, tax day. And every once in a while, one of those comes roaring back, you know, one of those famous quotes comes roaring back into relevance. This time of year in particular, it's hard to beat something said by Ronald Reagan. And he said, Republicans believe every day is the 4th of July. Democrats believe every day is April 15th. It's a great quote. And I'll tell you what, that hits a little too close to home right now. And sadly, unfortunately, it's not only Democrats, because right now there are many Republicans that view every day as April 15th. Folks all across this country and right here in Kansas just finished doing something they dread every single year. They sit down and gather their paperwork, punch the numbers, and watched a big chunk of their hard-earned money vanish. April 15th, tax day, the day the government reminds you exactly how much of your life it owns. And, you know, now, days later, we pivot. We start talking about something different. You know, we start talking about summer or spring break or whatever. This year, we start talking about America's 250th birthday. 250 years of freedom, independence, self-government. We'll have fireworks and parades and flag waving and speeches about liberty. But here's the uncomfortable question that nobody wants to ask. And Phil, you might want to check. Not entirely sure we're on the air. You might want to check the digital feed or the yeah. Check the FM feed.
We're on the AM
feed. If folks are apparently our FM signal is off. So if you're not getting us right now, switch over to AM 1330. We're working on picking up our FM feed at the moment. You also should be able to get us on the app, on the Odyssey app, and on digital. And you can always, like I said, find us on 1330 on the AM dial. And I appreciate, by the way, our buddy Leo Delperdang texting me there to let us know. But like I said, we'll have fireworks, we'll have parades, we'll have flags waving and speeches. But here's the uncomfortable question that nobody wants to ask, and that is, are we really living that promise anymore anyway? Especially when you factor in how much the government is already taking. Because the 4th of July is about independence. It's about the idea that what you earn belongs to you. And look at that. Phil's already got the FM side fixed. So we'll see hopefully it holds. But it's about a government that exists to protect your rights, not slowly chip away at them. April 15th, that's something else entirely. That's about extraction. April 15th is about taking, not giving. It's about literally robbing, from Peter to give to Paul. It's about a system that keeps asking for more and more and more, no matter how much hard work you put in. And here's the part that should really get your attention. It's not just Washington. It's happening right here at home. In particular, let's talk about property taxes. Because if you think April 15th is painful, just wait until you open your property tax bill. Now, every single legislator in Kansas walked into the 2026 session saying the same thing. We support property tax relief. Every one of them. And by the way, every member of the Kansas House is up for re-election this fall. And every one of them is going to talk about property tax relief because they know it's the most important issue to you. And that's what 75% of voters want. In a recent poll, 75% of Kansans said they want property tax relief, limits on rising valuations and mill rates. 75%. It's hard to get that kind of plurality out of voters. It's not a partisan issue. It's a landslide. But when you actually look at the votes of members of the Kansas legislature, the reality is a lot different. Only about 40% of legislators voted for property tax relief more than 75% of the time. Let me say that again. Less than half of Republicans and Democrats in the Kansas legislature actually backed property tax relief consistently. Less than half. All that talk didn't match the action. Whole lot of hat, not a lot of cattle, in other words. In the Senate, only 16 Republicans voted yes on all four key votes. In the House, 49 Republicans were consistent, but even there, not unanimous. And Democrats, only one Democrat, Lynn Melton from Wyandotte County, voted yes most of the time. Another, a House Republican, Brian Bergkamp, House District 93, right here in Sedgwick County, voted against 8 of the 9 property tax measures. 8 out of 9 property tax measures in the Kansas House, and Brian Bergkamp voted no. He has a worse record than some of the Democrats. Meanwhile, some lawmakers voted no on every single bill, every single one. And here's at least Brian Bergkamp wasn't knows, but I guess he's not a Democrat all the time. And here's where it gets more frustrating. Some of these proposals weren't perfect. We know that. Some were compromises, but even a partial limit on rising assessments, even a modest cap on mill rates would have been better than what we have now, which is status quo, which is the same thing we've been living with for years, which is essentially no meaningful protection at all. Homeowners are getting hammered. Property valuations have jumped on average about 40% over the last 4 years. 40%. Think about that. I got a text message from one homeowner in West Side Wichita whose property taxes went up 28% this year alone, and all he's done is mow the lawn. Your home didn't suddenly become 40% more livable. Your paycheck didn't go up 40%, and this guy's a retiree. But your tax bill, it sure did. And when legislators had the chance to do something about it, too many of them didn't. Why? Because there's a growing trend in Topeka that you need to understand. It's talk, no action. More and more lawmakers are prioritizing local government over taxpayers. And that's the truth. There were proposals to require voter approval for tax increases above 3%. That sounds reasonable, right? Let the people decide. But that got watered down. Why? Because local officials said elections were too cumbersome. Too cumbersome to ask taxpayers for permission before taking more of their money? So instead, they pushed for protest petitions, exemptions, carve-outs, anything to make it easier to raise taxes without real accountability. And legislators went along with it. And even that would have been better than what we got, which was nothing. In fact, they've now created a 40-member local government caucus. Its purpose? To make sure lawmakers protect local governments. And look, that's fine. If you want to protect local government, I get it, but I think they got plenty of protection of their own. But here's the problem. Who's making sure lawmakers understand the impact on you? On the homeowner who's getting taxed out of their home? On the retiree on a fixed income watching their bill climb year after year? On the family trying to budget while government keeps moving the goalposts? Because from the outside looking in, it sure feels like your voice is getting drowned out. Another year's gone by, no real assessment limit, your property taxes just keep going up. A weak, watered-down mill rate proposal that may or may not even survive the governor's veto. Lawmakers have adjourned, they've gone home, campaign seasons have begun, which means you're about to hear a whole lot more talk, a whole lot more promises, a whole lot more, we support tax relief, but here's the thing you need to remember, talk is cheap. Votes are what matter, and the voting record, well, that tells the real story, and we know what some of them, like old Brian Bergkamp, voted 8 out of 9 times against. As we heard this toward a historic moment, America's 250th birthday, maybe it's time for a little honesty. You can't celebrate independence while losing it piece by piece. You can't have the flag on the 4th of July and wave it and be ignorant about what's happening on April 15th. Because freedom isn't just something we talk about once a year. It's something that has to be defended every single day. And if people you elect aren't doing that, maybe it's time to vote them out. If they're saying one thing and voting another way, then maybe, just maybe, it's time for some accountability. Elections are coming, August and November, and this time, don't just listen to what they say, look at what they did. Because if we're serious about preserving the promise of this country, if we're actually believe in the idea that government works for the people, then we have to start acting like it. Otherwise, Reagan's quote won't just be clever, it'll be a warning. Every day becomes April 15th and the 4th of July, well, that starts to feel just like another holiday. If these politicians want to wave the flag with you in July and pick your pocket in April, maybe it's time to start voting like you noticed. If they won't protect your paycheck, your home, and your freedom, then don't protect their jobs. Because if government keeps taking more on every April 15th, eventually there won't be much to celebrate become the 4th of July. We'll take a quick break, and then Eben Brown from Fox News Radio will break down a major geopolitical shift as European allies quietly prepare for a possible future without U.S. leadership in NATO. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Folks, don't forget, right now, 9 unelected people, the majority of whom are attorneys, pick whoever they want for our Supreme Court. And frankly, Kansas deserves a voice in judicial selection. Voters, not lawyers, should decide. So if you're interested, if you want more information on that, on judicial selection, visit votersnotlawyers.com and get more information on our judicial selection process. And voters really should have that decision process. And of course, while you're online, make sure you check out the John Whitmer Show. You find us on Facebook and True Social. Get all the latest updates on the show.
A major geopolitical shakeup may be quietly unfolding behind the scenes internationally. According to new reporting, longtime U.S. allies in Europe are actively preparing contingency plans for a future without American leadership in NATO, even floating the idea of a so-called European NATO. This comes amid renewed criticism of the alliance from Donald Trump and growing concerns about whether the U.S. will remain committed to defending its allies against threats like Vladimir Putin, with Germany now signaling support for a more independent European defense structure that may involve a union without America. With us now to bring us complete analysis of this story is Eben Brown from Fox News Radio. Eben, let's start with the big picture. It's a pleasure to have you with us, by the way. Let's start with the big picture. How serious are these discussions?
Well, great to be with you. How serious are they? They're serious enough that they may be happening, but probably not to anything that's happening soon, right? The U.S. leaving NATO wouldn't just simply be the wave of a hand from President Trump. It would probably involve Congress. But the president could do something like reduce troop deployments in Europe or deployments of our artillery in Europe and stop spending money here and there. And that would begin to weaken the defensive posture because, as we can see, the Europeans just don't have what it takes to defend themselves.
Well,
they've been called out on the carpet on this, and it's sort of been demonstrated pretty well that they lack the resources. And that probably has to do with them not spending what they were obliged to spend under the agreements of NATO. Until, the first Trump administration, when they were called out, they were supposed to be spending 2% of their national GDP. They weren't doing that at all. Some were spending zero. And the complaint had been from President Trump and then from others, too, that NATO, which was designed to facilitate mutual defense in the face of the Soviet threat and eventually, the resulting Russian threat after the Soviet Union fell. It became from mutual defense to the U.S. defends us all right. With the U.S. taxpayer paying for it. And that's just truly unsustainable. The president has challenged NATO to spend more, and they have. They've gone up to the 2%. The president wants them to go to 5%. If anything, this war in Iran has proved is that they are quite incapable of helping out with anything. Now, while they may not have been motivated to help out with the offensive action of the war, and you can make the argument that NATO is not really designed for that, and it is a defensive pact, why hadn't the European powers come help secure the Strait of Hormuz, which is their oil supply? And, energy security is national security.
Yeah,
they made no effort to try to safeguard their supply of oil coming out of the Middle East.
I think that's one of the most frustrating parts in all of this. The United States, we don't rely on Iranian oil anywhere near as much or really, frankly, at all compared to Europe.
Yeah, it's not even Iranian oil because that was all under sanction anyway.
Right.
But oil out of the other Gulf nations. Whether it was coming from Qatar, the UAE or Saudi Arabia, which now they have other ways of getting the oil across the peninsula, across, over to the Red Sea and whatnot. But the Strait of Hormuz was where about 20%, I think, of the world's oil was transiting through.
Right.
Not to mention sales of it, not just to Europe, but also to Asia and so on and so forth. And they did nothing to help secure this. And, the president said, where are you? What's going on? Finally, the UK was, strong-armed into sending one ship, like a frigate.
Yeah, gee, great, thanks.
But let's explore what happened here. In order for the UK to send that one ship, they had to pull one ship off of a pre-planned NATO drill that they could not postpone. So in order to complete or fulfill their requirements for the drill, which I think was somewhere in the North Atlantic or I forget where, they had to ask Germany if they could get a loaner. So they borrowed a ship from Germany to participate in the NATO drill while they sent their ship to the Strait of Hormuz. And I don't even know if it ever got there. And at some point, the British said they were going to go defend Cyprus because Cyprus started taking attacks from Iran. And that never, I don't know if that ever came to pass. But it just demonstrated that the UK, which once had the world's most feared navy in World War II, while they were in losing but begging for our help, their military leaders doubted the capabilities of the American Navy. They know that they were up to snuff, up to the challenge. Look how things have changed.
We're talking with Fox News Radio's Eben Brown. So, Eben, what's changed here? I mean, Germany has historically resisted the idea of a Europe-only defense structure. I mean, how significant is Berlin's shift in this conversation? Or is this really just posturing? Or to be honest with you, is this just another example of Trump derangement syndrome?
I think it's all of that mixed into one. I think that there's the leaders of Western Europe don't seem to really like President Trump.
No.
I don't think that that's I don't think he cares, to be honest with you.
I think you're right.
You know, I would loop in Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney into that group. They may be on our side of the world, but they act very similar to Western Europe. I think that they probably are beginning to think, hey, wait a minute, he may be serious, or he may want to not defend us anymore. What are we going to do about it? We could really be sitting ducks here.
Right.
Now, it's interesting, Eastern Europe has a much different attitude, and these are the people that fell under communism after World War II, so I understand that they have a different perspective. And so they have, for instance, the foreign minister or the defense minister, minister of Estonia was talking the other day saying, you know, he has faith in NATO and faith in the U.S. specifically, but that NATO is kind of having some marital problems. This is the equivalent of a spouse just being fed up of having to take care of the house the whole time because the other one doesn't do a thing. You know,
it's a good analogy.
You have to help with the dishes or the laundry or the whatever. And I can't be doing this all by myself. And that's, I think, a very legitimate complaint that the United States vis-a-vis President Trump has.
Eben, so what does all of this mean for adversaries like Russia? I mean, does even talking about a U.S. withdrawal strengthen Putin's hand, or could a stronger, more independent Europe actually deter aggression, or are they basically a paper tiger?
Well, I think paper tiger is a good description. At least that's how they've been behaving. They could get themselves in gear and maybe shed that title. But that's an interesting question about how Vladimir Putin would respond to a NATO without the United States, some kind of European-only alliance. I think Russia is in such a quagmire in Ukraine that he probably can't reliably conduct any further westward expansions in his attempts here. He's not winning in Ukraine. Not losing either, but he's not winning. Remember, he promised his own people that he would be marching into Kiev in a week. Well, years later, that hasn't happened. And the Ukrainians, to their credit, have done a pretty good job at stalemating it all. But they themselves aren't beating back the Russians the way we would like them to be. Not that they're not trying. It's just that they're not able to push the Russians fully back out of their territory. And so because of all of this, I don't think that Russia has the resources. What the Americans and the Israelis have done in Iran actually affects Russia because they stopped the drone sales from Iran to Russia, and that's a big cutoff of weaponry. That kind of hampers Vladimir Putin's ability. We would also have the capability of entering, you know, bilateral defensive pacts with nations on a one-by-one basis. We could have a defensive pact with Poland and Estonia and Hungary or whatever. Maybe they pay us for protection. Right?
Yeah, certainly.
We could have an agreement like that. That would, I would say, definitely be a 100% deterrent to Vladimir Putin. That's always a capability that we could get ourselves into, and it might even be profitable. I don't personally think NATO ought to be abandoned, but it's just, if the case for reform has ever been made, it is now.
Certainly. Well, and we're certainly spending a lot of money on a NATO alliance that, at least so far, hasn't been there for us when we've needed it on certainly these most recent occasions.
Well, take us out of the equation for a moment. You know, I'm no fan of Turkey. I don't like the fact that they're in NATO. I don't think that they're trustworthy, their current government. Yet they were allowed into NATO. NATO has what is famously known as Article 5. It is the, you know, if one member is attacked, everyone responds, right? Take the U.S. out of the equation. Iran, in their retaliation for the Israeli and American bombardment, started firing missiles all over the place. They've been hitting the Arab states in the Gulf and whatnot. Those aren't NATO members, but Turkey is, and they fired at Turkey. Why didn't that trigger Article 5?
That's a good question. Yeah, that is a good question.
You know, and so is it because Europe doesn't want to because they have some affinity for the Iranian regime? Or are they just not capable of doing it? Do they lack the resources?
Well, and, you know, at some point we have to wonder or start asking the question, how long is America going to be the global policeman, and how long are we going to keep paying for it? So
that's been the big question of the Trump administration, both of them.
Right.
The ending of the forever wars, where we're just sitting there trying to keep order to our own, you know, at our own expense, both in terms of blood and treasure. It's one thing to use this, to turn a President Biden phrase on its head here, to use the example of our power to effect change and improve the world order. And that's different than going into somewhere and staying there for 20 years and accomplishing nothing. And then, you know, when we leave, the exact problem, revives itself as if we were never there. And that's what happened in Afghanistan. And with Iraq, we created a situation that essentially became another Iranian proxy, where exactly. Under Saddam Hussein, it most certainly wasn't.
Eben, we appreciate you joining us. Pleasure to have you on the show, my friend. If folks want to connect with you, they can find you on X at Fox Eben Brown, right?
That's the one. Thank you.
Appreciate you, my friend. I follow you. I encourage my listeners to do the same. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Coming up, Warren Martin from Kansas Strong will tell us about Kansas oil and gas futures, the Gulf, and his role as a consultant on one of the podcasts that are related to the Paramount Plus series, The Landman. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS, and make sure you listen to KNSS on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn apps. And, of course, make sure you like and follow The John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. All right. Well, oil prices climbed today after Iran once again blocked the passage of most ships through the Strait of Hormuz. It's a key waterway for one-fifth of the world's crude. On Friday, well, we had it open. That lasted less than 24 hours. Brent crude, the international benchmark, was up about 7% to $96.88 today after settling on Friday at its lowest level since March 10th on news that Iran would reopen the strait. But like I said, that lasted barely 24 hours. With us now to bring us an update on the latest is Warren Martin from Kansas Strong. Warren, thanks for joining us. Nice to have you on the show, brother.
Oh, it's great to be with you, John.
All right. So, yeah, like I said, you know, we were down on Friday. We're back up today. Well, first off, how is this affecting oil and gas producers in Kansas? Are they fairly steady? Are they able to, you know, kind of survive through this, or how does this affect them?
Yeah, Kansas producers is a little bit different because you have to remember last year we had 6 months of last year where oil prices were around $60 a barrel.
Right.
In Kansas, the oil price is generally about $10 below whatever oil price you're hearing on the radio or TV or news or whatever. We're about $10 below that. So that put us down around the $50, $52 barrel mark. So that really slowed down production. We saw production drop off in Kansas. We saw drilling operations stop. drop. I mean, right now, March, we finally started seeing some activity really begin to go up. We're up to 19 rigs that are out in the field, 10 in eastern Kansas, 9 in western Kansas. Western Kansas is more important for the production levels. Eastern Kansas, we do a lot shallower and smaller wells, so there's generally a lot more rigs that are out there. But what you got to really look at is the completion rate. Right now, we're only completing about half of the wells we completed, half a number of wells that we completed this time last year. So the oil price that's coming up is really kind of helping Kansas producers to help us get our production back on, because we were really below what was viable for the oil and gas industry for much of last year. Going forward. And that's really hard for people to kind of understand, because they have this one idea of oil. But here in Kansas, we're independent oil producers. The average oil well produces about 2 barrels of oil a day. So we're what we call stripper wells. Stripper wells produce 15 barrels of oil or less. And all stripper wells are also marginal wells, which means they work on very tight margins. So when that price gets down that low, then you really can't go out and service them. You can't go out and do new production.
It's not worth it.
It's basically not worth it. And so that's where we were at for much of last year. We're kind of back on track where we are now. We don't like to see the volatility. And that volatility is really driven by futures trading more than it is market standards of supply and demand.
I mean, do you foresee, and what are you, I'm looking at what's going on in the Strait, what's going on in the Gulf right now. The U.S. isn't dependent on Saudi oil, on Iranian oil, any of this stuff. But how volatile is this situation?
Yeah, about 2% of the oil that goes through the Hormuz Strait actually comes to the United States. 2% of our imports come through that strait. And so it really doesn't impact us that way. But I will tell you this, here's how it impacts us. Oil is a global market. There is the largest fleet of empty oil tankers probably in history right now that are on their way to the United States to fill up with oil. And because oil is the densest, most transportable form of energy on Earth, petroleum as a whole is the densest, most transportable form of energy on Earth, those oil tankers are coming here because you can sell the oil in China for the same price you can sell it in Houston. And make a buck off of it. And so if China's willing to pay more oil or more money for it than Houston is, then you tend to send it to China, because it's a free market capitalist system.
I mean, right.
We're trying to make money for it. And people just don't realize how transportable it is. I mean, you drive every day and you drive by one of those LNG trucks, that liquid natural gas.
Sure. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Or petroleum natural gas.
Yeah. We've
gas.
Seen them. Yeah.
You see them all the time. Well, when you drive by one of those trucks, next time you drive by one of those trucks, realize this is how dense and transportable petroleum is. When you drive by one of those trucks, when it gets to its destination and it's going to be turned back into a gaseous state, that one truck becomes 600 trucks of natural gas. That's how transportable and dense it is. And so that makes it a world commodity where producers don't get to pick the price. It's anyone in the world who's willing to pay for it. That's what the price is.
So when they get here, how much money are we talking about? I mean, this is billions of dollars then. All those tankers.
Yeah.
What will that do to the price?
So the average oil tanker, if you're looking at the average oil tanker, you're talking about $278 million to $367 million per tanker that's filling up and going somewhere in the world. And so it is huge. And that dollar value, that's what's so important about the strait, because Iran can say it's going to open the strait. The United States can say it's going to open the strait. But really what the issue is right now is the major issue is you have to get insurance on your cargo to be able to transport it. And there's not any companies that are willing to insure a tanker going through that strait unless it's insured by the country that it's coming from. And so it's really a volatile situation from a financial standpoint more than it is from a military standpoint.
Because they're afraid if you're sunk, then they're out.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it doesn't, you don't have to have Iran attack you or the United States attack you. All it takes is a terrorist to attack you. And that we have a very volatile situation where we've basically pummeled Iran into a position where, there's a question out there. We've taken away all their military capabilities, but they've been for a long time the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. So have we pummeled them into the position where they have become the terrorist state? And so it only takes a terrorist to take down the tanker. It doesn't take the entire country to do it. And so that's where the insurance question really comes up, and how many of those tankers are even willing to try and go through the strait.
Fascinating. That's bizarre. And you don't think about this, and obviously this isn't a story that we're getting on Fox News or CNN. And these are the, you know, a lot of politicians going around saying it's open. And of course, well, they're clearly not, because, I mean, are those ships moving right now, or are they on their way, or are they sitting in a port waiting?
They're sitting in a port waiting, and that's why you have the largest fleet probably in history from Asia that's headed to the United States to try and get oil and to make deals and contracts on those oil. That's why you saw the price. When you had several ships Iran turned back today, several ships the United States turned back today, you saw the oil price began to go up because future traders started looking at, okay, well, we can sell it. And there's a difference between paper oil and actual oil price. Now, what you're seeing on the oil price, what's reported on the news and all that, that's paper oil. That's people buying a contract. And if you remember back in the COVID period, you had oil went to minus $34 a barrel.
Right, yeah.
And I didn't even know that was possible. And you start looking at, how is that possible? I mean, you still got a commodity there. How does it go to a negative value? And the way that it does is because you have investors that will trade on these futures. And what they're doing is they'll say, okay, I'll buy 10,000 barrels of oil at this price because I believe it's going to go to this price and I can sell it. And so they buy the 10,000 barrels of oil, but they don't have to take possession of that. And they'll buy a contract for 3 months or 6 months, 9 months, 15 months. It's generally a short-term contract, about 15 months or less. And they buy it on that price, but they have to sell it before that contract comes due. If they don't sell it before that contract comes due, they have to take possession. Not very many investors have the ability to take possession of 10,000 barrels of oil.
Gotcha.
And so what you saw when it went to minus $34 a barrel is you saw a tremendous number of investors who had bought these contracts, and their contracts were expiring, and they had to get rid of those contracts or take possession of the oil. So they actually paid people to take the contract from them so they didn't have to go take possession of 10,000 barrels of oil.
Makes sense. Interesting. We'll take a quick break, and then I want to ask you about the crude life, which is, you're a consultant on the podcast based on the hit Paramount Plus TV series Landman, and I would love to get some, basically I'm going to ask you whether or not Landman's real, how real the show is.
It is not.
I know. I knew you were going to say that. You're going to break my heart. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll get a little bit of insights on the show Landman. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. With us still is Warren Martin from Kansas Strong. So, Warren, you're a consultant on the Crude Life podcast. It's a Landman podcast. The show's not that accurate.
No, it's not that accurate, but it's really good because it's opened up the conversation about the oil and gas industry. A lot of people are interested in it. They watch it, and then everywhere I go, they're like, is that real? And, you know, what actually happens? And it opens up that conversation, and that's a good thing, is because we need to be talking about this industry.
So I remember when we first talked, you told me about, like, the wrench. There was one of the first episodes. For example,
right.
How is it not that accurate?
Yeah, for one, he's not a landman. He's more what we might call a company man. I don't know a landman in anywhere in the world that carries a firefighter's helmet in the back of their truck. And it goes out in the field to take care of a fire that's at a well. Landmen generally are those people that are in the courtroom. They're basically like a real estate agent that's making sure you have clear title on the minerals to be able to do it.
Right.
And definitely he had the wrench on backwards, and he deserved to lose a finger when you have the wrench on backwards.
He put a wrench on backwards when they were trying to tighten it.
Absolutely.
We will have you on again. I want to explore this a little more. But if folks have questions, they want to find out a little bit about Kansas Strong, it's Kansas Strong.com, and the podcast is thecrudelife.com, correct?
That's correct.
All right. I appreciate it, Warren. Thank you for joining us. Coming up, we will have my conversation with Michael Chiklis from The Shield and The Fantastic Four. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. Folks, KNSS is always here for you. Tell your legislators to keep AM radio in vehicles by texting AM to the number 39179. And tell Congress to keep AM radio in cars And make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and through social pages. And follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show.
Joining us now is Emmy and Golden Globe winning actor Michael Chiklis, best known for his unforgettable role as Vic Mackey on The Shield and as Ben Grimm, The Thing, in The Fantastic Four. He's also co-chairing Arts Advocacy Day with the Creative Coalition, bringing arts to Capitol Hill to talk about free expression, the First Amendment, and federal arts funding. Michael, great to have you on the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Michael, you're in Washington this week talking about the First Amendment and arts funding. When you hear concerns from folks who worry about government funding for the arts and whatnot, what do you say to them about why it matters so much?
Well, it's foundational to the film, television, and music industries that we have the National Endowment for the Arts. I would not have a career if not for that. When I was 14 years old, I helped to open a theater called the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts. And as a young kid, I got the opportunity to play Samson in Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. And if I didn't have that experience, I often think, like, what would have happened to me? What would have happened in my life if Mark Kaufman, who started that theater all those years ago, wasn't able to secure a small grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, and in so doing, start a theater that's still thriving 45 years later, and start my theatrical career where it galvanized my desire to be in not just the theater, but then into film and television. And this is where you nurture talent in every corner of this country. This isn't about some highfalutin, you know, metropolitan opera house. This is, you know, arts programs, music programs, theater programs that help to discover, nurture, and grow talent all over this country. And I don't know about you, but I shudder to think of what my life would have been like had to forget my own participation in film and television and theater throughout my life. I'm talking about if I didn't get to go to my local theater or get to go to a concert, you know, in little towns all over this country and see wonderful young new talent coming up through the years. This is how you find the next Mozart. This is how you, you know, great theater is discovered and great film and is created. It's foundational to the industry. And without the NEA, that really is hurt terribly. I mean, what sort of a society are we if we don't support art? Every great civilization is marked by their arts and antiquities. If you walk down the mall in Washington, D.C., one thing you're struck by is when you look right and left, what do you see? You see museums, arts and antiquities. And these are snapshots of who we are as a society. Artists are a reflection of who we are in our society. And I think everything has become so partisan in this country right now that it's tragic, because this isn't, you know, the Creative Coalition is a nonpartisan group, a nonprofit group. We go there to advocate for two of the great things that make this country what it is, which is our First Amendment right to free speech and expression, and our great artistry. And the soft power alone that we have enjoyed as a country for the last 200 years by our films and televisions and music being spread throughout the world, that makes the United States aspirational, that makes people love this country and want to be here, so much is they look at what we put out as a country culturally and they go like, man, that's a cool place. I'd like to be there. Right? It's one of the things that makes this country what it is. And listen, we can always vote with our thumbs. If you don't like what an artist puts out, change the channel. Don't go to that theater production. That's how you vote. But you don't say, I'm going to cut it and not make it.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Speaking of, things that you're working on, I have to commend you. I did happen to see a new project you've got out on Apple TV called The Senior Movie. Great film, by the way. Fun movie. Absolutely fun. Thrilling little fun film outside of what you usually make. I mean, after all, a 59-year-old college football player is a bit of a stretch from Vic Mackey and The Thing.
Yeah, true story, too. Mike Flint, the great Mike Flint, he went back to college and played his senior year at 59 years old.
Yes.
I'm very proud of that movie because I went and I played the football, too. I was a captain of my football team in high school, but man, 40 years later to put on a uniform, that was daunting.
Oh, I'm sure. one thing I do have to ask, folks are going to, I'm sure my listeners are going to remember you from the Fantastic Four, and there's a lot of Marvel Universe crossovers. Any chance we're going to see you donning the Ben Grimm outfit anytime soon?
I don't know, but it's possible there's so much. I don't know. I never say never because a lot of people have been talking to me about it, particularly recently. A lot of people have been writing to me and talking to me. I haven't heard from them, though. I haven't heard from Marvel or Disney. So we'll see. At some point, maybe. I don't know. Well, like you say, there are so many crossovers. We'll see.
Well, and we all know that even if you had, you wouldn't be able to tell us if you did. So, Michael, we appreciate you joining us. You're at Michael Chiklis on X. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
Thank you so much. And people, go to thecreativecoalition.org.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers.
Yeah, once again, that is thecreativecoalition.org. He wouldn't... I could get it back and ask, but he wasn't going to tell us. The way Kevin Feige is, even if he'd signed a contract, he wouldn't tell us.
Yeah,
he was donning the Ben Grimm suit again on penalty of death. You know how that is. Coming up, we'll take your calls. What do you think? You think we'll see a Chiklis back as Ben Grimm? I don't know. I'd love to.
I'd like to see that. Yeah,
I would too. How about a Ben Grimm versus Ben Grimm?
Ooh.
You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Well, we had a great day of action yesterday with the great folks at AFP. Spent the day out. My wife and I were out there door knocking as a great way to help mobilize grassroots activists for legislative advocacy. We were talking with folks about the upcoming vote here in August on the Supreme Court justices. If you want to get involved, if you want to help educate voters and just make sure that folks understand the issues that matter most, you can visit ks.americansforprosperity.org for more information. And, of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer. It's the best way to get all the latest updates on the show.
Nice picture of you and your lovely wife out doing door knocking.
God, it was gorgeous weather, too.
Fantastic.
Oh, my. It was... so perfect. The weather was great. We had great reactions at the door. So it was a perfect weather. I just hope it stays that way. No more hot. I would love, of course, then we'd have, California like population problems and price gouging and all that stuff. So it would just be so nice if we could get, just for a while, maybe all summer. It would be nice if we could have.
It's not the population.
Trust me, if we had that kind of weather, we'd have that kind of population.
Well, it's what the kind of population.
Yeah, I wish that we had that kind of weather all the time. Mm-hmm. I hate the heat.
I don't mind cold. I can deal with
the
cold.
The same way.
Yeah. I hate the heat.
Yeah.
Once it gets up over 90, I'm like, ugh, you know, I don't want to go outside. I hate the heat. I would much rather be cold. I can always put on another layer. There's only so much you can take off and not get arrested.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw, there was an interesting story that came out just before the weekend. The Trump administration, the Department of Education, held 4 Kansas school districts liable. Did you see this?
I did because I'm the one that posted the story.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, so there was a picture of Linda McMahon.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
So anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
So
Kansas City, Olathe, Shawnee Mission, and Topeka violated federal law by hiding children's gender transitions from parents and allowing biological males into girls' bathrooms, locker rooms, and sports. And of course, you know, the ACLU and the Kansas Department of Education are already saying, oh, no, didn't happen. You know, nothing to see here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, yeah, whatever. I mean, we've said all along that this is happening. And now they've been found. They've been caught doing it. And it's been crickets out of the actual districts themselves. I've yet to see a statement actually from Kansas City, Olathe, Shawnee Mission, or Topeka districts. Have you seen? I've been watching.
I have not. No.
I haven't either. No. I've yet to see one of the 4 districts actually publicly make a statement. And there have been multiple politicians, including former Governor Dr. Jeff Collier, specifically call them out. I'm waiting. I'm just waiting. This is from the U.S. Department of Education, so you know it's legit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, when I wrote up the story, I don't remember seeing. So how long did the districts have to comply before they
lose money?
Before they lose money, yeah.
From what I understand, there's already been some that's, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, but I think they've got. The last time Trump did this in another state, it was like 30 days.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't much time at all.
Doesn't mess around.
No.
And you shouldn't either.
No. I mean, they've knew this was coming. I mean, this is, they've been warned. All of these universities were warned. Other districts have been warned. And it's like when, Wichita State University had that issue with the diversity, equity, inclusion nonsense. And then they just changed the name of it, but kept the program. And the professor was caught on a Zoom call saying exactly that.
That's
well,
right.
We're still doing the practice, but we just changed the wording and took it off our website. Mm-hmm. But don't worry, we're still doing it. Well, yeah. So apparently these school districts, same thing. So here they are. They are literally violated federal law. This isn't a policy. This isn't like just a Trump policy or an executive order. This is a federal law. Now, granted, every Dem probably voted against it. Doesn't matter. It's still law. Law is law.
Yeah.
And they don't like it. You know, there are a lot of the laws that Obama and Biden passed that I don't like. I still have to comply with. You know, I don't like that non-discrimination ordinance that Brandon Whipple crammed down our throats. I still got to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this stuff here, you know, I don't know. I just, it'll be very interesting to see. And I'm frankly surprised that the Wichita School District wasn't caught here too. But I think they did the same thing. I think they just cut their policies and changed some names and I think they've just been sneakier about it. I would not be surprised if at some point they get caught too.
Now, the 4 districts where it did, that doesn't surprise me in that.
No.
That
Kansas City, Olathe, Shawnee Mission, and Topeka, they're very liberal.
Yeah.
That's why I think Wichita, trust me, it would not surprise me in the slightest if Wichita gets caught too. They're pretty darn liberal. Mm-hmm. They do a better job of hiding it. They do a better job of, you know, trust me, this nonsense is going around here too. They're just hiding it better. They're just sneakier. I guarantee you this is going on in Wichita. They're just doing a better job of hiding it.
Yeah.
Well, I won't guarantee it. It just wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if it's going on and they just are being craftier about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, would it surprise you? I'll put it that way.
No. Not at all. Not at all. Hey, while we're on the subject of the Wichita School District, we'll kind of change lanes here.
Sure,
a little bit.
Pivot. I know, because we got a message on this, I think, is where you're going here.
So, wanted to get your opinion on it because I think we are one or two sessions in now where they've had these public gatherings for the new bond.
Their little information session where you're not allowed to say no, you just have to say how much.
We're basically getting the three options that they have.
Option A, B, C, but there's no D, none of the above.
Right. And so option A, $650 million.
Right.
Option B, $650 million.
Exactly.
But we're going to do it a different way.
And option C, $615 million. There's no D, none of the above. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So it's all bullpucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all bullpucky.
And so they're having, how's the turnout been?
I don't know. I did see the first one that they went to. Channel 3 went to it and actually covered it. Mm-hmm. And then they interviewed people afterwards. And if you look at who they interviewed, it was all teachers and teachers union members and pro-education educators.
I'm shocked.
They're preaching to the choir.
I'm shocked. I see this with a lot of the local media around here is that they interview people after events like this, but I think they seem to focus and heard the ones that they want to talk to, and they'll talk to them right away.
Right,
get them on camera.
That's who they go to.
That's what we get to hear. And then we might have a 5-second blob right at the end of the story. And these people feel this particular way.
Right.
And then,
They bother to get someone from the opposition, and even when they do, it'll be someone who just like, well, I don't like the way they're rolling it out but they don't actually go to somebody who says they already have enough money, they don't need any more money, or they object to the fact that it's 650. Or here's an argument that you could make. The district is down 3,000 students. They have declining enrollment. Their academic performance has either flat, stagnated, or is declining. They've closed, three schools? So they're closing schools, down 3,000 students, and have academic performance that has not improved, yet they want more money? Where's the logic in that?
Yeah.
So you're declining enrollment, poor performance standards, you're closing schools, and you want more money than $165 million more than you did less than 2 years ago. And I mean, at what possible private sector situation, what job would give you more money when you have bad results? You've had failed job performance, bad results, and you get a promotion, which is you get more money. I mean, only in the government do they give you more money for worse results. I mean, that's literally what this is.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Only in government do you get more money for worse results. And that's no, not only no, but hell no. Yeah. I mean, it's the dumbest thing. And yet they just go blindly along, and the board is going blindly along. And here's another one you've got. You've got one member of the school board who actually works for Hutton Construction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've got a member of the school board, a voting member of the school board, who will be voting on this thing, who actually works for a company that will be bidding on the construction. You're telling me there's no conflict of interest there?
No,
you're right. You're right. Yeah, no. She works for one of the primary bidders for the construction work. Oh, but there's no chance there's any conflict of interest here whatsoever. I'm sure that there'll be. Oh, I mean, come on. It's.
Yeah. I don't.
Right.
Right. No, I have no other words.
Phil, it's for the kids. It's for the kids, Phil. It's all about the kids.
Okay, and that's what they keep saying.
Right, it's
and
all about
you
the kids.
You keep saying we're down 3,000 students.
Apparently, it's not about those kids.
No. So.
It's all about the kids. All right. What do I know? I'm just mean-spirited, I guess. We'll take a quick break, and then my buddy Curtis Houck from Newsbusters will break down a new study that exposes how the major networks have gone silent on migrant crime. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. We'll be back right after this. It's all about the kids. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. I want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS or by listening to us on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn apps. And, of course, you can always make sure to follow us on Facebook or through social and find me on X at John R. Whitmer. Those are the best ways to get the latest updates on the show. And find me and follow me online. A growing number of Americans are asking a pretty simple question. What is the media not telling us? A new analysis highlights several brutal crimes allegedly committed by illegal immigrants. And these cases that have been received very little to no coverage from major broadcast networks. Critics say this isn't an oversight. It's a pattern. They argue it points to deliberate efforts to downplay stories that don't fit the preferred narrative on immigration. So is it media bias in action? Is it, intentionally violating the public trust? Or is it just an oversight? Well, I think I know, but we'll see. Joining us now is Curtis Houck from Newsbusters. Curtis, thanks for joining us. Pleasure to have you on the show, brother.
Good to be with you as always, my friend.
So, I mean, let's just call this what many people say it is, a selective silence. I mean, when you have multiple violent cases like these getting virtually zero coverage, walk me through the numbers here. Isn't it what it is, media bias?
Right. Yeah. I mean, let's look at some of these here. My colleague Jeff Dickens, we try to do this a couple times a year where we pick four, five, six in that range. And folks can read it at newsbusters.org. And the only one that we have of these four recent high profile cases is, I know listeners may have seen this one, a graphic beating to death of a woman outside a convenience store in Florida with a hammer. That one, the president has posted about numerous times, including sharing the video on his Truth Social page. CBS News has covered it twice. For a few minutes and change. But, you know, other than that, nothing on ABC or NBC. And then the other stories we have here, a murder in Missouri, a murder in Texas, and then one in Fairfax County, Virginia, where an illegal immigrant is accused of killing his 3-month-old child. Mm. Now, if those kinds of stories are committed by native-born Americans, unfortunately, let's just say for what it is, Americans have a fascination with true crime stories, and especially in that last case, as morbid as it is and spine, you know, tingling, people are just drawn for whatever reason to those kinds of stories. So you think the only reason this isn't being covered is because of the person's immigration status.
Right.
And that's exactly what we're dealing with here.
Right. Now, you mentioned the one in Missouri. I mean, this was an Obama-era illegal accused of murdering a 15-year-old Missouri boy and who allegedly
begged for his life.
Exactly. And ABC, CBS, and NBC gave it 0 minutes each.
Yes. And yet we're very interested in the Bahama story,
right.
The last couple of weeks. Very, very suspicious circumstances with that. So reporters could get a free vacation to the Bahamas,
Right. Well, yeah. And anytime Trump does anything that is even remotely, I mean, I saw MSNBC spent 30 minutes talking about the fact that, some guy saying that Trump has dementia. And yet, here's an illegal in Dallas accused of killing his wife less than a month after their marriage. And again, ABC, CBS, and NBC gave it 0 minutes. But they spent 40 minutes saying that Donald Trump has dementia and early onset Alzheimer's.
It's news you can use, John. That's really where we are. right. juice you can use. You know, Good Morning America, we're not going to talk about the illegal immigrants committing crime in major metropolis. But, you know, we are going to talk about Donald Trump having dementia and then deals and steals with Tory Johnson, you know. It's kind of like their idea of selling books last week. They had Stephanopoulos brought on Lanny Davis to talk about, you know, third way politics, about stability and how everything was just so great in the 90s.
Right.
Which is very interesting. But that's their idea of a newscast. It's not public service enterprise journalism. Well, yes, they talk about weather, but, you know, but they do it from a very sensational perspective, and Michael Strahan whistles every time he has to talk about hail and damaging winds because of the space between his teeth. But not serious news. We're not talking about fraud. No, we don't have time for that. Robin Roberts and Stephanopoulos and Strahan pretend to be fake friends and force us to care about whatever lesbian couple in the WNBA.
Don't mince words, Curtis. What do you really think? I mean, we're talking with Curtis Houck from Newsbusters, but I mean, you and I both know if the roles were reversed, if these crimes fit a different political narrative, I mean, we'd be seeing wall-to-wall coverage of that right now. If this was a conservative white guy in Texas, they'd be blasted all over the news.
Or White Hood.
That's
there was a bunch of people in white hoods doing stuff.
Yes.
With hammers outside of 7-Elevens. I mean, we'd be hearing all about this. And yet we still do. Donald Trump is elected, or Charlottesville happened. You know, they're still making hay out of that. I mean, Charlottesville. I mean, next year we're going to have to deal with Charlottesville 10 years later. You know, like,
that's right.
America's changed forever when a bunch of losers went up with some of their mom and dad's tiki torches. But, you know, when up until recently, the Justin Fairfax murder, because before this, I was going to reckon that more murders were committed in Fairfax County right outside of Washington, D.C. by illegal immigrants than by native born citizens. So that's an interesting reality there. But in these stories that we read about Newsbusters, is it's all about local prosecutors as well. And I think that's just such an important takeaway here for listeners, for you guys in your area. These stories do matter. Not that illegal immigrants can't and won't cause crimes in your communities, but it comes down to local law enforcement and local prosecutors right. having a role and doing their part. It's not that, you know, we don't all have chips. This isn't China where we all have, you know, social credit scores and everybody knows where we are all the time. But if you're doing what you can to get people out of your community or turned over to ICE so that they can take care of them, that is so important in these kind of anecdote stories that the press will dismiss as anecdotes or just local news stories. They're just local stories. But, you know, when something happens, someone says the N-word at a school board meeting, CNN says, oh, we got to talk about this. What does this mean for the country?
Right. And yet, you know, how damaging is this to the credibility of legacy media, especially when Americans already feel like they're not getting the full story of major issues like immigration because the legacy media won't cover it?
And it's not like these stories require a lot of time. In some of these cases, they're in major markets where networks, they don't have full-fledged bureaus anymore, but they still have correspondents, you know, still have correspondents in Florida. They also have correspondents based in Texas.
Dallas,
you know, they have correspondents in the D.C. area, the Dallas area, and then the case in Missouri, they have people up in Chicago to talk about. You know, that's how quickly they were able to get up to George Floyd and all the ICE and Renee Good stuff and Alex Pretty stuff at the beginning of the year. So there's no excuse for this kind of thing. And that's where you lean into local affiliates as well. I mean, the idea that you don't have time for these kinds of stories, even a news brief, is simply deliberate.
Yeah, well, that's the key. It's deliberate. They don't, again, it doesn't fit the narrative. It doesn't fit what they want to cover. And so they just.
And in election year, especially.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Brother, I appreciate you as always and the great work that you guys do. If folks want to read this story, if they want to check some of the clips that you guys have, they can find that at newsbusters.org, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I appreciate you, my friend, as always. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
Carry on. I'll talk soon.
Thanks, buddy. We'll take a quick break, and then I want to hear what you think. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you, great way to get involved, the good folks at Americans for Prosperity Kansas. We just had our last day of action. They do them once a month, the third Saturday of every month, but they're always out there. They're actually hiring right now. If you're looking for a little summer work, you get out there, door knock. It's a great exercise. If you don't want to, you know, work, you can volunteer. It's a great way to get involved. Great way to help educate voters, make, you know, phone banking, volunteering, you know, helping to get, educate folks. You can get more information to make your voice heard by visiting AmericansForProsperity.org. Sign up. And of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer. Get all the latest updates on the show.
So, all right.
Yeah, we had fun. We were out there. A bunch of folks were out door knocking. They had a good crowd. We were out in kind of down in Goddard, went out West Wichita. So good day. Okay. Yep. Beautiful weather.
Oh, yeah. The weather was the best part. So
had fun.
Big shout out to Dave Wilson.
Oh, I mean, oh, well, yeah. That's the Dave song. That's the Dave song. We always, it's a little hat tip to Dave. That was his Saturdays in the Park was always his. So we do that every that last show intro piece from that last segment's always the Dave song.
So. Yeah, so that was the first thing I learned when I started producing the show is that you had to do it. So,
absolutely, you know, 8:45. That's always the Dave song.
I am Dave 2.0. Maybe I'm Dave 0.25 or something.
Now he's, he's a morning show on KEYN. Yeah,
he's just a big wig, and he's left us for bigger and better.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see him every morning, and I get down there and pick on him every morning.
Oh, yeah. So, Dave's fantastic.
I get off at 9. He's still got another hour, so I get to go down there and pick on him a little bit. So.
Yeah, my only problem with Dave is that he's a Dodgers fan, but that's okay.
And a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So I get to give him a hard time about that because, you know, and right now they don't even have a quarterback, so I don't know what they're going to do. I think he's waiting around to see if Aaron Rodgers is going to retire or not, and then – Yeah, so I go down and kind of razz him about,
Dave's a good guy. Hey, I know we are just about ready to have another live show.
Oh, yeah. In fact, we got an email on that one, too. Somebody was wanting to know.
What was that? Has it been a month?
Yeah, about a month ago we did the last one. We'll probably do another one. My guess is not long after the filing deadline. So probably June-ish we'll do one.
Okay.
Probably down at AFP again would be my guess. Because there's, you know, you've got, there's some major events coming up in June. You've got the filing deadline. It's the first weekend in June.
Right.
And then the Sedgwick County Republican Party is hosting a candidate. They can't do a debate with the government, but they're going to do a round table discussion with the Republican governor's candidates. And that's coming up in June as well.
Very relevant as we've got August stuff coming up.
Right. That's June 18th, I believe, the Thursday, the 18th. And then the 27th of June, Saturday, is actually the first Republican Lieutenant Governor debate. That's the actual debate.
Okay.
Both those events are here in Wichita. So,
all right. A lot of good things coming.
Yes. And we just don't know who the candidates are going to be because between now and the filing deadline, who knows how many may drop out.
We've still got 7 right now. Is that right? 7 or 8?
I think there's 9 still. Because none of them have gotten out. Well, Doug, or, you know, the podcast guy up in Kansas City. I don't think he's still in it. But the rest of them are all in. Mm-hmm. But a lot may change between now and the actual filing deadline. Right. You know, some may drop out because the candidacies aren't viable. You know, they may not have enough money. This is going to be a very expensive gubernatorial campaign. So if you don't have enough money, you may drop out. You may not be viable because of that. You may not be able to get the traction necessary because, you know, running a statewide gubernatorial campaign is I mean, A, it's going to be expensive, but you got to be able to put the campaign team together, which is going to take a lot of personnel. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other big possible component in all of this. Is what does the president do? If there's an endorsement at some point before the primary, that could clear the field.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
You know,
yeah.
If the president endorses, you know, any of the front runners, I mean, he's not going to endorse Stacey Rogers or Charlotte O'Hara. But if he were to endorse Schwab or Joy Aikens or Governor Collier or Phil Sarnicky or Ty Masterson, that could, you know, that
huge.
That could, you know, he could endorse any of those and that could change the entire game. He's not going to endorse Vicky Schmidt, but any of the major candidates there, you know, could be very interesting. So talk to you tomorrow morning. See you next Sunday.